Workforce experts say Wisconsin will need almost 300,000 people to move to our state between 2010 and 2030. But, and this is important, the state has lost more than 27,000 residents since 2010. The Wisconsin Taxpayer Alliance is issuing a major new report. It's called Wisconsin's Migration Challenge, on these patterns. To discuss that report, thanks to Todd Berry, president of the Taxpayer Alliance. Todd, welcome back.
Good to be back.
I have spent a lot of time with this report, and what my head is exploding. How did you get inside all this IRS data? So let's just talk about the methodology before we get to the guts of it.
Well, and I didn't have to do some of the real gutsy in the trenches, but the concept is you can get data from federal tax return information about where people lived in 1 year and what their family size is and what their income was, what their age was, and you can get it for a succeeding year. And so that enables you to pair this stuff together and say something about where people are coming from and where they're moving to. Now, there's limitations to these data, which we notice in the report, but it's you know, real tax filing information. It's not going to be, you know, totally useless.
The scope of this report seems to me goes further than some other of the many statements that the WTA issues, doesn't it?
Well,
just in terms of the methodology,
somebody has got to be talking about sort of the big picture in Wisconsin, and it doesn't seem to be coming from the square, the Capitol Square.
Fair enough.
We first sort of talking about this stuff in 2004. We did a report called Wisconsin 2015, which said that we were on the precipice of a demographic problem. Baby boomers retiring, school enrollments dropping, workforce not growing. And pretty much nothing happened. Well, then other state agencies put out things in 2009 and so forth. We redid the report in 2014. Right where we're supposed to be given the forecast, looking out to 2040, that got some more attention. But what that report said was, we're not going to have any workforce growth between now and 2040 net. None.
Right.
And the other thing, as you mentioned in the intro, those forecasts are predicated on importing some people from other states or maybe other countries. And we're not going to meet even these forecasts if we're already losing people at a time when we should still be gaining them.
Yeah, I understand.
So, if you want to talk about jobs, if you want to talk about, you know, families staying in Wisconsin, if you want to talk about economic growth, there's so many areas that it all comes back to this. Because if you don't have a workforce that's growing within the state from its natural population that's aging, then you have got to attract people.
Okay, let's get into the guts of the report. Define for me, you have two terms. You have in-migration and out-migration. Define each of those.
Okay. For the purposes of the study, people that move into a state are in-migrants.
Yes.
They migrate into the state, and out-migration, therefore, is people that are leaving the state. So somebody moving from Illinois to Wisconsin is part of the in-migration phenomenon. We actually gain people from Illinois, incidentally. People that leave here to go to, and the states we tend to export to include Florida, Texas, California, and our neighboring states to some degree, those are out migrants.
Right.
And we can, because we have individual tax return information, we can essentially start adding all these piles of movers in and out by age and income and so forth.
Painting with a broad brush,
yeah.
Who is more likely to in-migrate to Wisconsin?
Yeah.
Younger, older, middle income, upper income, lower income?
I'm gonna dodge that question for a minute because
right.
There's something really important that should be said, and that is people love it here. We have less out-migration from this state than all but three states in the country.
California, and I forget the other two.
Yeah.
Okay.
And actually,
that's important.
It's very important.
We have less out-migration than all but three other states?
Yeah. And by the way, it's similar in Iowa, Minnesota. In other words, there's this, something about this upper Midwest culture, whether it's family or ethnicity or traditions or whatever, we sort of like to stay here. So that's not our problem. Getting to your question, so who tends to move? The national data pretty clearly say if you're young, you move a lot more than if you're middle-aged. Mm-hmm. Now, retirees we'll sort of put off to the side for a minute. But generally, as you get older, you don't move. We also know from the data that renters tend to move, and homeowners don't. So age, you know, household status, to some degree, income. People that are leaving Wisconsin tend to have somewhat lower incomes, and the reason they're going is because they can see the prospect for more income growth elsewhere, and that's particularly with younger people.
And you report that. You document how much of an income increase by age bracket someone has when they out-migrate from Wisconsin compared to someone who stays in Wisconsin in the same age bracket.
Yeah.
It's fascinating.
Yeah, and this can get a little
And the young
detailed.
Professionals earn more when they leave the state than those that stay here.
The people with higher average wages are more likely to stay here. People with lower average wages are more likely to go, but the people that go will realize more income growth in the future years than the people that stay. Mm-hmm. And you know, when you start looking at why do people move, one of the big answers is job opportunities. And when you look at average wages in Wisconsin, it's no news. You know, we are below the national average in the vast majority of occupational categories.
On that note, page 8 of the report, one of the challenges Wisconsin faces is low average wages, particularly for occupations that require college degrees. One more sentence. For example, average pay for mechanical engineers in Wisconsin is nearly 14% below the 50 state average. Which surprised me, because you talk about chemical engineers and mechanical engineers. And aren't these the people that many employers are telling our politicians we can't hire enough of?
Mm-hmm. To some degree, yes. But, you know, particularly when you look at younger age cohorts, and we got this confirmed anecdotally from ex-Wisconsin residents who were working in Minnesota, and they were confirming what the data were saying is, you know, I got out of college, I had an engineering degree, I couldn't find a job in really what I wanted to do in Wisconsin, so I went to, and you can guess the names in Minnesota, the Medtronics, 3M, et cetera. And I always wanted to come back to Wisconsin, but I had so many, because they have this cluster of more technology kinds of companies historically, it's easy to jump from company to company and rise career-wise and salary-wise.
In the city's metro area.
And it should be said, you get outside of metro Twin Cities, and actually Wisconsin is doing better outstate than Minnesota is doing.
Once you get outside that metro area. I want to ask you about, you say that Wisconsin gained residents between 1994 and 2004. That's important. We gained.
Mm-hmm.
But from 2005 to 14, another 10-year period, Wisconsin lost 52,000 residents and about the same number of families.
Yeah.
So we gained in that one era, and why did we lose in the second? Thoughts?
Well, this actually is what sparked our interest in this whole subject back in 2003-04, because we started to see things happening in Wisconsin employment, economic numbers, tax collections that we couldn't draw on the usual tools, and it was clear that there was demography going on. What was going on in the 90s, Wisconsin, in the 1991 recession, for instance, did not really have much of a downturn. And so we had an incredibly punishing double-dip recession in the 80s. So we had a lot of our employers who had slimmed down, become more competitive, become much more lean, and didn't really get hit by the 91 recession. And so when the economy recovered, we were essentially on or already off the launching pad compared to other parts of the country. And our incomes grew faster. You know, it was just a very strong time.
Do you attribute the 27,000 who outmigrated, left Wisconsin, to the Great Recession of 2008-09?
I think that's a factor because we know that the state lost something like 100,000 residents in 1981-82. You know, 27,000 is not a lot, and it's a testament how good we are at keeping people here. But when you need every single body, 27,000 isn't insignificant.
Well, yes, and when the experts say we're going to need 300,000 to provide a economic a workforce, a workforce for the future.
We need that assumption that we're going to have a flat workforce to 2030-40 assumes 300,000 immigrants. So there's no reason to strut around over a workforce that isn't growing. We want one that's growing, but at the very least, we don't want one that's shrinking, and we need in-migration to ensure
that. The implications of a shrinking workforce. At what point do companies who are now saying we can't find qualified workers say, that's it, I'm going to expand in state X, Y, or Z?
Yeah. I think that's...
Is there a tipping point for businesses?
I don't know the answer to that. We know that there are certain kinds of employers who have been saying that they have not been able to find skilled trade kinds of jobs. Mm-hmm. I mean, the welders is always trotted out, but and in a manufacturing state that makes things and welds things and has a lot to do with metal, it's that's sort of fundamental. Now, what they're doing is they're going to government and to technical colleges and saying, help us. And so we're trying to respond, but if we're diverting people that were going to do occupation A to being welding, we solved to some degree the welding problem, but we still have this overall labor supply that is limited.
And if we're one of the best states at keeping people, in other words, fewer Wisconsinites out migrate than all but three other states.
Right.
Then, as that population gets older, it poses major public policy questions, like healthcare, transportation, school funding, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
You use the term in the report, our trading partners.
Yes.
These are states where we have a healthy exchange.
Well, yeah, what we meant really is that we're trading
partners.
We're trading people.
Trading residents.
And there are 10 states that we do the vast amount of exchange of people back and forth with. And the neighboring states are big, Michigan, Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota, and Indiana.
Yep.
And then you can add some of those warm weather states across the
Arizona,
the
Texas,
Arizona,
Florida.
Texas, Florida, California. Although it's interesting that when you look at a map of the nation, that California is bleeding people. And just as a side comment.
I understand.
Yeah.
But what intrigues me is you talk about the gain and loss of income as a result of these migration patterns.
Mm-hmm.
You say net migration with Illinois added almost $500 million to total Wisconsin income, and the 3 years is 2012 to 13 and 14. So that's interesting. That's good. But you also say net, the Badger State lost 3,775 people and $162 million to income in Arizona. How do you track growth income, which is good news, loss of income, which is bad news?
Well, again, the tax return data help you do that. You cited Arizona, but the big news here, and pardon me from turning the page here, is, we gained almost a half a billion dollars in income from Illinois and a lot of people, but we lost 700 million to Florida.
Lost 700 million to Florida. Yeah. Is that same 3-year period?
Yes, yes,
12,
sir.
13, and 14.
Yeah. Okay. And it's only 7, well, there's 93,000 moving out of Wisconsin to Florida, 7,000 move in Florida to Wisconsin. So
93,000 out.
And 7,000 in.
Yeah. Net loss of income.
$700 million.
$700 million.
Mm-hmm. And that, by the way, when you look at our top 10 trading partners that we talked about earlier, oh, and by the way, Colorado, the total net loss of people is the 20-some thousand you mentioned.
Yes.
The total loss of income is about $1.3 billion, and more than half of that is going to Florida.
Now, the $1.3 billion we lost is over what period?
Oh. The 11, 12, 13, I mean, that 3-year window ending in 14.
But you also say the wider window during the years 2005 through 2014, mm-hmm. losses totaled $3.6 billion.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Major impact.
Yeah, yeah. There's a wonderful little chart in this report that tracks the number of people coming and going to Wisconsin. It's a line, and the number of families coming and going. And what you see is that generally with people were net back in the 90s, and it's bouncing up and down, but you can generally see it starting to hit zero in 2004-05, and then it just keeps going down.
Well, it's interesting to me, the concept of losing people but gaining income.
Oh, yeah.
That's a curious phenomenon.
Yeah.
Well, how does that work?
Yeah, there's some funny things that go on here. It has a lot to do with the nature of the household. I mean, is the household a single person? Is it a bunch of people? Mm-hmm. So that, you know, depending on whether you're attracting families or not attracting families. The other thing is that what we saw in these data sometimes is we would gain net people while losing net income because of the nature of the individual family incomes of who was moving in and out.
Right.
And I hope everybody watching hasn't totally lost interest. But, you know, if for instance, you are attracting more higher income people.
Yes.
And losing more low-income people. You could be losing people but gaining income, but in our case, it's often the other way around.
You talk about you could not get IRS data on the incomes of who leaves first on a state-by-state basis.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So you have to work with the national figures.
Yeah.
And here's what intrigues me. It's on page 9.
Which was the person that did this, it was a fairly clever way to do it because, in a sense, the conclusions we came to were, so what are the underlying forces, personal characteristics, and so forth that describe moving behavior between any state?
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. But so let's talk about, you say Wisconsin is losing a disproportionate share of high-income seniors.
Mm-hmm.
So then when you look at national, not Wisconsin-specific mm-hmm. data, on mm-hmm. page 9, it mm-hmm. says, the percentage of retirees moving to the warm states rises from 42% for those with incomes under 100,000, 0.1,
mm-hmm.
to 44.7% for those with incomes between 100,000 and 200,000, 0.2,
mm-hmm.
and 47% for those with incomes above 200,000.
Mm-hmm.
Where do we rank in this question of our wealthier seniors leaving or staying?
Mm-hmm. We, and the data you cite, clearly show that retirees tend to go to warm weather states. But within these data, it suggests that you will pick, if you're going to pick a warm weather state, you will pick a warmer state without an income tax.
Which is Florida.
Florida, yeah.
Is it also Arizona?
Well, see, Arizona has an income tax.
Okay.
And it's interesting when you look at the total, this is nationwide, the total number of Florida of people over 200,000 nationwide, 1 in 5 of them goes to Florida, wherever they're coming from, and only 4 or 5% go to Arizona. So it's a nationwide phenomenon. But then again, you have a lot of states that are net exporters that have significant income taxes. New York, for instance.
Well,
New Jersey.
In terms of out and in migration, yeah. You talk about the triple whammy of low wages, a high percentage of home ownership. Mm-hmm. And there's one other factor, help me here. You remember what it is?
Education.
Education.
Yeah. People that have more education, college degrees, behave differently than people that don't.
Right.
And people with college degrees, they're better educated. They maybe have a larger worldview, perhaps. They also have perhaps a larger skill set. Whatever it is, a college-educated person is more likely to move. Now, think about Wisconsin. We're somewhat below average in terms of college degrees. We're somewhat above average on home ownership. And we tend to be a little older. All of those factors.
And we're lower on wages, aren't we?
Yeah. Put aside wages.
Wages?
All of those would predict that Wisconsin would be a let's stay here state.
Okay.
wages across all age groups, not the seniors. It's difficult to generalize here on is it weather, is it taxes, is it wages, because it's different for different age groups. It clearly, for young people and people on a career track, low wages matters for the reason that we talked about earlier. They know that the wages are higher elsewhere and they're going to get more income growth.
We've been talking about people leaving the state or coming to Wisconsin, but I also find it very interesting in your report, the last two pages,
yeah.
Movement within Wisconsin. So let's talk about our two largest counties.
Yeah.
Because on page 10 of the report, you say the period here, and that's important, the 3 years, 2012, 2013, 2014, in Milwaukee County, 22,224 more people left mm-hmm. than moved here,
mm-hmm.
but the amount of income over the 3 years studied, those 3 years that I just mentioned, nearly $1 billion in income left the county, 0.1, 0.2, 420 million of that 1 billion stayed in the contiguous mm-hmm. neighboring counties.
Mm-hmm.
That's rather fascinating.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's just a confirmation of what we've known, that the dynamic that was going on in southeast Wisconsin for decades is the city of Milwaukee and Milwaukee County for many years was losing population while the wow counties, Waukesha, Ozaukee, Washington, were gaining people. And gaining the income that Milwaukee was giving up.
But the consequence is that municipalities, local governments in Milwaukee County, have less income to tax to provide vital services, isn't it?
Well, remember, it's the property tax that is going to be the dynamic here. Probably a more precise way to say it would be they are going to have their residents are going to have less income with which to pay property
that's
taxes.
That's a better way to say it.
Just to say pay taxes implies that maybe there's a local income tax or something, which Wisconsin is also very different than other states, is local governments don't have a lot of sources of revenue. It's basically the property tax or state aid.
Although if you are adopting the wheel tax.
What
Dane County loses... Also on page 11,
yeah.
Dane was the only other county with a net income loss of more than $100
million. Yeah.
So you do point out that a few of these rural counties are net gainers.
Mm-hmm.
It's just very interesting.
Yeah. some of the counties that are in some of the biggest difficulty in terms of losing overall population and not being particularly poor are attracting a certain segment of the population. So Iron County, which has a lot of problems and is losing overall population, on net, in terms of migrants, was gaining slightly more than they were losing.
And you mentioned Vilas County as a gainer,
yeah.
too.
And I think, I just have to, Florence County, too. What's in common there is you have second home kind of activity where the family maybe had owned a place for years and years, and there's a retirement, and they decide that they are going to sell the home in Madison or Mequon or Janesville or whatever, and they're going to. I can think of multiple personal examples of that.
Yep.
Exactly.
I think
that.
We both can. One of the conclusions as we wrap up, Wisconsin's climate is not conducive to attracting workers from other states. That said, high-quality schools, a world-class university, and a reasonable cost of living make the state attractive. But your next sentence, however, relatively low wages, particularly for jobs requiring a college degree, limit the state's appeal for those most likely to move. So here's my final question. What major policy decisions do elected officials in the Capitol face to help us hit this need, which the experts say 300,000 more in migrants by 2030?
Well,
what can they do?
My own view is that we don't focus enough on startups and early growth stage kinds of companies, because we also know in this report that high income entrepreneurial inventor kinds of people are very mobile. And so if we have an attractive climate for starting, maintaining, and growing a new business, we have the work ethic and we have the educational base, so we would be attractive to them. And of course, as they grow and that they're working in a national or global marketplace, they're going to grow and, in a sense, bring people to us. So I that would be, I think, one solution.
And that's one reason to fund the university.
Well, yeah, but and also to make sure that private sector research is strong too, and that interconnectivity between university research and private research is strong.
I want to ask you about one decision that I remember covering when it was debated in the legislature. You remember it too. 5 or 6 or 8 years ago, they said we're going to exempt Social Security benefits as a way to keep people here and people and their wealth here. Has that been a success?
Well, I mean, it was well-intentioned, and I understand the political appeal of exempting income from people that vote a lot. But what part of our population is growing the fastest? The retirees. And are all of these retirees dependent solely on Social Security income?
No.
No. So what we, in a sense, did is we exempted Social Security income from some people who might leave for very different reasons, but it isn't going to be because of Social Security income. It's going to be because their incomes are in the 100, 200, 300, 400,000 range, and they might be selling a business or something, and it's just cheaper to live in Florida. The Social Security income was a bipartisan thing.
You
remember,
it was
Republican legislators, Democratic governor, and it was politically popular, but in terms of addressing the outflow of retirees and of a higher income level, and we're not talking about a lot of people, but the amount of money involved is significant. The taxation or not of Social Security is not going to be the lever that you pull or push.
Your group has done reports on this in 04, 14, and now 16. Mm-hmm. What do you hope our major policymakers do with this report?
Well, I would hope that collectively there would be some intellectual curiosity, and that if they don't want to read our stuff, there are other things out there from the university, from state agencies, from national groups, and try to get into their head the whole demographic dynamic and its implications in terms of migration for Wisconsin, because they tend to debate and fight over things that in the scheme of things are relatively modest in terms of the state's economic climate, while missing this billion-dollar gorilla in the room, which is we have a workforce that isn't growing and we need to attract people.
Right. Well, it's an important report. It's called Wisconsin's Migration Challenge, and it was done by the Wisconsin Taxpayer Alliance. WTA President Todd Berry, thanks again for talking about this document. Thank you.
My pleasure.